Welcome to this week's worldwide broadcast of The Joyner Report. Now here's your host, Angela Joyner.
Hi everyone, it's another Friday night on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network and at UPRN 105.3 FM New Orleans. Be sure and take note of the number to listen for your cell phone, 704-631-4060. Just dial that number and enter the station ID code of 2899. I just see that someone has posted that we have 47 people tonight so far in the Pal Talk chat room. So if you are listening from your computer, just log in there and you can ask questions or submit comments there. As a heads up, anybody listening probably already knows this, but James Fox's movie, I Know What I Saw, is going to be aired on the History Channel this Sunday night. Check your local listings for times. I'm in the Central Time Zone. I believe it's going to air at 8 p.m. And he made it by the hair of his chinny chin chin. He had a lot of work to do that History Channel wanted done, like 30 pages worth of stuff, and he barely made it, but he did get it in there. So I have seen the preview DVD that he shopped around, and but he had to add some to it, and he's added information on the Stephenville radar report, so I'm really excited about that, and I think it's also going to be played again on Monday. Thanks for that in the chat room, Goff. I knew that. I had just forgotten it. Tonight's guest is Joe Montaldo. He's the founder and national director, co-founder and national director, and spokesperson for ICAR, the International Community for Alien Research. He was originally affiliated with MUFON as an investigator, but he actually left MUFON for reasons of, I believe the reason was a lack of information being shared with the general public. He's worked tirelessly for many years. He's worked with many abductees. He was in the Navy and earned 3 degrees there. He's investigated close to 5,000 cases of alien contact and abductions. He also owns this radio station that I'm speaking on now, and he graciously allowed me to have a show here beginning in, I believe it was May of this year. Welcome, Joe. How are you doing?
Oh, great, Angela. Thanks for the intro. I've been doing good, having fun, watching everybody's shows grow. I've actually been really happy, and I'm seeing a nice upward swing for the fall, which is, I got to say, for radio business, usually as we start getting into October, we start seeing the numbers drop a little bit. But everybody here is doing well, so everybody listening, keep up the good work.
All right. That's great. Now, here on Friday nights where I'm at near Stephenville, everybody's at the Stephenville High School football game or the Dublin football game. Texas football is a big deal.
Oh, I know. You ain't going to tell me. I have a lot of friends in Texas. I know they take their football seriously out there.
Well, listen, one of the reasons I wanted to get you on the show is because we had talked and I had read Alfred Weber's article claiming 1 billion abductees or contactees in the world, in the entire world, which would be just like this, the abduction highway, it seems to me, to outer space. But he got that information from you, he says, and I did listen to a little bit of the interview today, and you said that you would like to come on to explain some of that.
Well, actually, I would, because, I mean, Alfred's great. I love Alfred to death, and we're actually really good friends, and he's a local boy from down here in the South in New Orleans. But And I did say 10 to 15%. I'm not going to back off of that because current research, and not just my research, but Yvonne Smith and Dow Sims and Mary Rodwell, Bud Hopkins, David Jacobs, all agree it's 10 to 15% of the known population has either been contacted or will be contacted. So we figure there's about 600 million active contacts worldwide. Alfred, of course, took the high road and said 1 billion, which it could be. I don't know. I mean, we're sticking with the 10 to 15% any way it goes. So if you go to the 15%, then you're looking at, what is there, 6 billion people right now. So that'd be about 1.1, 1.2 billion if you take the 15%. But even with that, and I want to clarify this, we don't think they're all being regularly abducted. Matter of fact, to be totally honest with this, we do think that 10 to 15% of the population will be contacted or has been contacted.
Will be or has been?
Well, it's kind of both, because you have the young generations coming up, and you have X amount of children being born every day. So out of those children, X amount of them are going to be abducted. But you also have people who have been having this experience their entire life. But inside of all of that, you have people where the aliens will come in, like Travis Walton. Now, Travis is a little different, and I'll get back to that in a second. But you'll have them come in, and they may start taking you as a child, and then whatever it is that they're planning on doing or whatever it is that they're doing in that family line, they may decide that you're not right for their program, and then the abductions will just abruptly stop, and that will be it. But you still have to count them because they have been abducted. Even though they're not actively being abducted anymore, you still have to count that their mother was a contactee and they were taken. So you still have to count them, even though they're still not having experience. So it gets real sticky in there. And you know, that's why we always say 10 to 15%, because none of us like to quote numbers, because there's no real way to put an exact figure on this. And I said this on Halford's show. Anytime we get into alien agendas or how many contactees that there actually are, we are speculating. I mean, we can say that ICAR's had more than 15,000 cases come across its desk in its 11 years of existence. But not every one of those cases have been investigated thoroughly. A lot of those cases were, or acquaintance cases, is where we meet people through either the internet or one of the chat rooms or the radio station or one of the conferences and things like that, and people that report their stories or report what happens to them and re-record it. If you go by, and I have to say that most of the current researchers only think that 1% of the abducted population comes forward, well, that's a couple of million contactees worldwide right now. So if that's true, then the number's right. It's somewhere up in the 600 to 700 million. But like I said, there's no way to prove it. Until little gray John comes down and says, Angela, guess what? I want to come on your show because I heard you and Joe Mantel the other night, and I want to clarify that really there's this many contactees. Until that point, I mean, we're guessing. But we wanted everyone to understand that the guess is made by, it's a consensus inside alien abduction research. It's one of the things that most ufologists don't realize, because abduction researchers aren't ufologists. I'm not really a ufologist because I really don't chase lights in the sky. I chase aliens on the ground or aliens that are taking contactees or so on and so forth. But what you'll find in the abduction field, which is a separate field from ufology, is there's a 60 to 70% consensus amongst the field. That is unheard of in almost any field, especially ufology. I mean, in ufology, they can't even agree on Roswell or Betty and Barney Hill, but yet people like myself and David Jacobs, which, by the way, we don't really care for each other very much, but we do agree on a lot of stuff. Not on everything, but on a lot of stuff. Same thing with Bud Hopkins and Darryl Sims and myself and Mary and Yvonne and the rest of them. We do agree on about 70% of what goes on, and that is unheard of. And it gives our evidence base a much more solid, much more credible evidence base, because you have independent researchers or independent organizations coming up with the same conclusions. And that's
okay.
Key here. But anyway, that's enough about that. I'll let you go to what you were going to say.
Well, you know, one of the things I heard you say in that interview is that you believe, now I don't know if this is the general consensus with your colleagues,
okay,
that abductees go way back to the time of Egyptians, not just Roswell from then forward, but way back there. Is that right?
Yeah, that's actually a general consensus of the organization and the abduction researchers. It doesn't matter what, and there's not an abduction researcher in this field. For that matter, a contactee in the field, that if you ask them when they think abduction started, they're going to tell you way back, way, way back. The problem here is there's an argument exactly when. There were some cave drawings found in Europe that date back about 50,000 years. There was also some cave drawings found in the United States that date back about 5,000 years. What's interesting about both of these drawings is in Europe, there's a, I think it's a herd of deer, or it looks like a herd of deer, I'm not sure, it just kind of looks like that. And mm-hmm. there's some hunters coming up behind a deer. Over the top of the deer and kind of in the front, there are three round, what looks to be silver discs, with something projecting down from them coming to the ground. Bottom line is, if it's more than 200 years ago, there should be nothing in the skies but birds. Nothing.
Right.
So you have that, and then you have the same exact drawing except over a herd of buffaloes in this cave in the United States. So that gives you at least a basic timeline. Now, if you go back through all the ancient artwork and the Egyptians and the Sumerian texts, you could say 6 to 10,000 years. And there's another key marker to this, which is kind of odd. Every major monument on this planet, whether it's Stonehenge or the Great Pyramids or the city of Angkor Wat or Easter Island, all line up with their prospective constellations at 12,500 years ago. This is not a coincidence.
Say that again.
Okay, all right. You know, you got the Sphinx in Egypt. It lines up with Leo at 12,500 years ago. The Great Pyramids, the three Great Pyramids, are line up with Orion at 12,500 years ago. The three main statues on each of their island line up with their, I think it's the Seven Sisters, at 12,500 years ago. Angkor Wat's main temple lines up with the Draco system at 12,500 years ago. And I'm sorry.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Stonehenge lines up with the Seven Sisters. I forgot what the constellation was for Easter Island. I have to go back and look. But the thing of it is you can't build something. These things were built on average 6,000 years after this date. So knowing that, first off, tells you that all these races had a good idea of what precession was because they had to know how to line them up with that constellation that was 6,000 years earlier in their history. They were trying to leave us messages behind. Matter of fact, there's two pyramids in Mayan cities that also line up. The thing about it is they were trying to leave us a message. It's got to be something genetically encoded because all the civilizations tried to leave it. And it all points back to a specific time marker, 12,500 years ago. Now, what it means, Angela, is I have not a clue. All I know is that it's more than circumstantial evidence at this point because there's too much of it. And it's all pointing back to a date that you have to wonder, okay, what are our ancestors pointing back to? What happened at 12,500 years ago? What was it that got the whole world involved? There's not many things that we're going to all agree on. I would have to think it's alien contact. It could have been something else. It could have been Paul Lavalette's cosmic pulse that came along and dusted the planet. I guess it could have been a couple of things, but it wasn't anything disastrous because we're still here today, and 12,000 years isn't that big of a time frame in our history. So it had to be something significant enough that all the cultures on the planet got interested in it, but not disastrous to wipe out the current
humanity.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
well, you know, this 1 billion number, how far does that go back, or is that current people here that would be abducted? This doesn't include people that have passed on. That,
you know, it's interesting you bring that up. Most people don't know, but just in the last 100 years, 4 billion people have died on planet Earth. 4 billion, ladies and gentlemen. I know, that's a lot of damn people. Start thinking about that over 6 or 10,000 years, there's been a lot of people die. No, the billion number, or for me, the 10%, is current estimations of what the current population is today. And I got to say, a lot of researchers think it's one-third of the population.
Wow.
I don't have the data. Let me put it this way. We have a lot of people that contact us on a regular basis. More people these days contact us than we have the resources to check into. And a lot of times we're running 6 and 8 months behind. And the organization's growing every day, but still, there's a lot of stuff coming in that we just don't have the resources to check up on.
And, right.
But still, it does not prove that we have this overwhelming number. I look at it like this, you know, personally I've seen at least 15,000 cases come across ICOR. Now, like I said, not all of these are written cases. Some of these are cases off the internet that were investigated. Some of them are just sitting on the phone with people for a couple of hours and so on and so forth. Now, this ain't even how many have been reported. If we go by what we get reports, I get 50, 80, sometimes 100 people a week write me and say, hey, Joe, I've been abducted. Well, 80% of them are BS, okay? And the other 20%, you really got to dig down in, because a lot of those seem to be abductions, but when you really get into them, turn out to be something else, sometimes child abuse, sexual abuse. You'd be surprised what alien abduction will manifest itself as, or what something will manifest itself as alien abduction. It just floors me. First time I did an interview with a woman and found out that she had been molested as a child and not been alien abducted, I'm not a psychologist. I was like, okay, you did not get abducted by aliens, and you really need to seek professional help. And that's all I could do for her, because I'm mm-hmm. not a qualified psychologist. And I'm definitely not going to go screwing around somebody's head. So I'm figuring, and don't hold me to this, because I could be way wrong on this, but I'm figuring about 5 to 12% of our current incoming flow actually turn out to be contactees. But that's a lot of people. And that's just us. That's not MUFON or any of the other organizations out there, or any of the other, like the Japanese organizations, says they boast more than 4 million abduction reports. And they built a $2 million dome to house their UFO abduction organization, and that's how seriously they take it in Japan. There's two groups. As a matter of fact, a friend of mine from Hong Kong wrote me the other day and says they estimate that there's at least 100 to 150 million abductees in China. But until
wow.
he comes and tells us, we don't know.
So you get reports from people, you know, that they're trying to find out what's happened to them, and they think that it's alien abduction, but it's something that's really happened in their past that has to do with molestation or something. You know, you would think that they would rather believe, molestation seems more real to most people than being abducted would.
And you'd be surprised how many cases fall into that category. And it's not always like a sexual molestation. A lot of times it's just abuse in a wealth of ways. I just don't understand, and like I said, I'm not a psychologist. I don't understand why people would lay alien abduction over that. I mean, I can understand why they want to hide it. I truly do understand that. But I don't understand why they chose alien abduction to hide it with. I just don't know why they did that. And I've asked a couple of psychologists about it, and they said because it's so shocking to them that it just blocks out all memory of what happened prior. But I'm not a psychologist, and we do refer people. There's a lot of trained hypnotherapists in the organization, and I'm not the biggest fan of hypnotherapy, but I do think it has its use and plays a purpose in the field. I just think it's abused ungodly in ufology. I do think it is widely abused in the field and used to enhance memories. And I
well, because it is, it's fairly easy to lead someone,
oh, yes,
isn't
it?
And, you know, you would have to, if you're someone that wants to be regressed, then you should check to see who the most reputable people are that would not lead you into saying that really didn't happen.
That's the thing. It's easy. We set up guidelines. DeAndrew and I and a couple of other ICAR members, we used to cram. We'd be up to 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning talking about this. And we all decided that, look, you can use hypnotherapy, but first off, the very first thing you should do, okay, all right, Bob, I'm going to regress you today. Bob, I want you to tell me what happened on October 2nd of 2008. I want you to start at the beginning and go all the way to end and tell me. And then when you get at the end, I want you to go backwards and tell me from backwards to forward. And then that's it. You record and videotape the whole session. And that's all you do the first session. Then you and him and a couple other reputable people, and by the way, I tell everyone, you never go to a regressionist without taking someone you trust explicitly. The person you sleep with, your best closest friend, your mom, I don't care who it is, you take someone you trust explicitly. Always, because guys and girls, there's a lot of charlatans out there looking to take advantage of people and plant memories and write books, and I just want y'all to be careful. But anyway, you do that. After you do the front-to-back thing, you get together, 4 or 5 of you get together, and you go through and you watch the video, and you do keyword, and you go through and you assign questions to areas of questionable places on the video. And then you come back and you bring them back in the regression and you use just those questions. And you cannot use words like aliens or spaceships. There's just a whole host of words that cannot be used while doing regression. I got to say, with the exception of one or two people I've met in the field, I would not trust most regressionists in ufology to regress my damn chihuahua, okay? That's a person. Don't get me wrong, there's a couple of good ones. I like Yvonne's style, and I like Mary's style, and I liked Leo Sprinkle's style until I heard about the Spock thing, and then I just kind of lost my mind after that. And the girl was married to Captain Spock. I still have not gotten over that one, by the way.
No, well, it's sort of...
That was crazy. Yeah.
Well, I know another thing that you wanted to address tonight was the magazine article in Australia, because they kind of jumped all over the 1 billion number, right?
Well, what they really did, the billion thing kind of aggravated me. But, you know, I knew when Alfred played it that way that it was going to be a problem. But that's fine. I'm a big boy, and I've been in the field for a while, and I can take a little criticism. And I know what I was trying to say, and I'll make sure everybody understands it. But what they really did that made me mad was they jumped on the article a little bit, and they mentioned the organization's name, and my name was... But that was fine. There's a free plug in a big magazine. And what pissed me off, excuse my language, ladies and gentlemen, is when the girl who did the article said, all alien abductions are sleep paralysis. I thought it was Susan Clancy again. I'm like, oh, wait, we got more on in Australia now. I want to clarify this for anyone that's listening, because Angela has a different audience than I have. Right now, there's about, almost 90,000 people logged in. The thing about it is most contacts happen when someone is wide awake. And I got to say this, probably 60 or 70% of the contacts either happen while you're awake or during the day. Less than 20%
60 to 70% happen while you're awake?
Or during the day, yeah. A lot of them happen on, like, E.T. likes to do stuff when you're doing mundane things, like you're driving to work, or anything that's mundane, something that's easily to loop a memory that will confuse you.
Okay, well, see, now, I did not realize that because I always... And, of course, I don't know anything about this subject, but I always thought that most people were taken while they were asleep in a bed.
Well, you see, that's the thing. It's a big misnomer, but, you know, a lot of people think that all contactees are found in rural areas in trailers. In the United States, the hottest contactee spot in the United States is New York City. The second hottest is Los Angeles.
Wow.
It's per capita. It makes actually perfect sense to me. Those are the two biggest
cities.
Okay, now,
how do they take you... Okay, you said they like to take you when you're doing something mundane, like
when you're just
driving down the road in your car. Well, what happens to your car?
You know, we've often wondered about that, Angela. That's actually a damn good question. Y'all don't know. That's a damn good question because in some cases they find the cars on the side of the road, but they don't find anybody. And get this, we didn't realize this until about a decade ago. The reason sometimes contactees are found wandering down the road is because their cars were towed. Their cars had been abandoned on the side of the road, and then, of course, a tow truck came along and took the car, and then when E.T. came back and dropped off the guy, there was no damn car. I always wondered about why they would find contactees just wandering down the side of the road half naked and stuff. I was like, come on, what is it? I know E.T. knows how to find their house. What's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until a friend of mine, actually, a contactee, said, you know, Joe, I got abducted last night, and I still ain't found my car. And I'm like, what do you mean? He said he went through the whole abduction, and he said, I was in my van. I was driving down to Florida. He said, I don't know what happened. He said, I'm still not knowing what happened. I can't find, well, his car was found in the pound at Mobile, Alabama police station. They had found his car abandoned on Interstate 10 at like 3 o'clock in the morning.
And he was where?
He was just gone. He was abducted. Then they set him back down on Interstate 10 in Alabama. He was just roaming down the highway.
But a distance from where his car was.
Well, his car was in the pound.
Oh, they had towed it. Okay.
They'd already towed it. But this is rare. I mean, you do have a lot of them that do that now. A lot of contactees swear they take car at all. I don't know if they've ever taken my car. I can't remember that, but... A lot of contactees swear they take car, and I don't see why they can't. I mean, they can walk through walls, they can absorb stuff, they can pick up stuff. I don't see why they couldn't just zap your car up just like they zap you up. It just seems like it would take up a lot of space, but especially if they were doing, like, multiple abductions where they could do a 500-600 cars. But they like to do mundane stuff. And a lot of times what they'll do is you'll be in your parking lot getting ready to go, and contactees will a lot of times will tell me they'll be sitting in their car, and all of a sudden they're like, wow, what just happened? And they'll just be sitting in their car kind of wondering what happened. I do think on a lot of occasions they do take the car, but I do think a lot of occasions they leave it behind.
Joe, it just amazes me that you talk so freely about people being taken by ETs, just like you talk about going to the grocery store to get a gallon of milk. You know, and I'm just not there yet. And it just amazes me. But we have a question in the chat room, and someone wants to know, are there steps in being abducted? I mean, is there a first thing that happens to you, a second thing?
Well, there's a lot of things, actually. There's steps in the fact that when you're 5 or 6 or 3, whenever it starts for you, they'll pick you up, and a lot of times kids will remember them as their imaginary friends. Usually those kids are taken on board the ship and let mingle and play with other children. This is actually a common thing for contactees. When you hit puberty, from puberty to 20, yeah, there's steps. They're all nasty, mean, and you don't want to have nothing to do with it, but that seems to be when ET runs most of its kind of breeding, genetic hybrid experiments. But to give you a rundown on an average abduction, let's say, Angela, you're a contactee. You just get off the radio. You just finish your show. You're like, yeah, I had a good interview. You're sitting there watching TV, having a little drink, maybe eating a burger or something, and you're just zoning out on the television. All of a sudden, you're sitting there. You got your drink in your hand. You notice it's warm. You look over the clock. It's 4 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
And you're like, well, what the hell just happened? I was just watching TV at 10 o'clock. Now it's 4 o'clock. Now, you could say you fell asleep. Of course, your drink's still in your hand, and your sandwich is still there, and nothing else has moved. You're exactly the same way you felt, which we all know that's impossible because nobody's going to stay like that for 4 or 5 hours. So,
right, and that's what people call missing time.
Yeah,
you don't know what happened.
Yeah, because it's just gone. No one knows what happened, So, but what actually happened was ET came in. Sometimes they paralyze them with a beam. Sometimes they paralyze them with one of them little rods. Sometimes they don't paralyze them at all. It depends on the level of trust the contactee has. Some contactees are more than willing to go along with these projects, so there's no real need to sedate them. And those contactees actually usually retain a lot more information than the ones that have to be sedated or drugged, or they're not actually drugged. They use some kind of mind control to do it. But
so, are you saying there are people that are not afraid, that they don't mind being taken, that it's not against their will?
Yeah, we call them keepers. See, for me, there's 3 stages of this. There's abductee, contactee, and keeper. Abductees are simply people that really don't have any clue. They know there's something going on. They're not sure what the hell it is. They just know there's something going on in their life. They're missing time or they're gaining time. Things are just weird. They're having strange dreams. But they really don't have a clue to what's going on. A contactee generally knows. They know this is happening to them. They're not sure what they're going to do about it, but they know this is happening. They start researching as they start getting more involved in the field, or they start learning more information. Keepers, on the other hand, are usually longer-term contactees, sometimes as young as 30. Usually they're in their 40s, 50s, or 60s, but these are people who have come to grips with what's happened to them. And they understand that, you know, you can let these people be taken and just let the aliens do whatever you want, or you can get involved. And the aliens prefer for the keepers to be involved, because then when they're bringing on 10, 50, 100 humans, there'll be a human face there as well, someone to say, hey, calm down, look, it's going to be all right. Don't worry about it. You know, it's just what's going
on. Well, you know, when I spoke with Travis Walton last Friday night, is that what he saw, you think, or keepers, the human-looking people that, you know, wouldn't say anything to him?
He might have. I got to say something, though, and I never realized this before until your interview, by the way, so you just probably made a bunch of trouble. There's a twinge of something else there, and I'm going to have to get an interview with Travis or something, because I heard something else there, and I'm not going to say it on the air tonight because I'll get too many emails about it, but...
oh, come on, say it.
There just seems to be other contact involved, and we'll leave that. Look, I got to catch enough hell over Betty and Barney Hill. They still can't believe I rewrote the Betty and Barney Hill case. I still can't.
Because you believe that they were military abductions rather than
ET? In the United States, they were military, and in Canada, they were And a mutual friend, this is funny, I'll tell you this real quick. Melinda Leslie is a friend of mine. She met up with Kathleen Maldron at a conference just recently and asked her about some of the stuff that I've said. And, you know, Kathleen did a rebuttal, and y'all can find it on the iCross site where we rebutted her rebuttal. But anyway, it's on the site. She admitted to Melinda that she thought from the point of the abduction forward that they were military abductees. The only thing that Kathleen won't really go for is that I said they were abducted in Canada. But yet she always tells me that Barney's attention span was phenomenal. He noticed everything. So when I asked her about this, I said, so you, and this is her own words, she said that he was just so detail-orientated that it wasn't even funny. It was almost a fetish for him. So I said, okay. I said, so you're telling me this. I said, but yet he couldn't remember checking into his hotel, checking out of his hotel, or the place he had breakfast at. I'm thinking, okay, there's a problem here. He had to go in and sign a ledger to get in the hotel and pay for it. He didn't see the name. He didn't realize he was staying. That morning, he had to walk out the hotel, check out of the hotel, sign the ledger, and leave, and it was daylight. The sign should have been seeable. He was inside of the ledger. There should have been signed inside. Nowhere did he find out what hotel he stayed at. Didn't even get a receipt, I guess. So I'm just not buying that. Then they couldn't even remember where they had breakfast. And then when they got directions from somebody, they both described the man entirely different. Entirely different. They gave two entirely different descriptions of the same person. Pretty much tells you something happened up there.
There's somebody in the chat room that says, why do you think our technology was adequate to do a military abduction
Hills? Actually, it wasn't really that adequate. Listen to the Hills' own descriptions. They took hair, nails, skin samples, scrapings. They took a razor blade and scraped you. They used physical needles. Matter of fact, all the technology involved in the Betty and Barney Hill case is what we consider to be terrestrial technologies.
Okay.
Not extraterrestrial. There's nothing
now
they
that
describe.
Makes sense.
Yeah, nothing they describe, including the map. Everything that Betty and Barney describe, and they even describe like tables and lights and paperback books. I mean, these are terrestrial-based technologies. This sounds.
And
like
you feel like the star map was also terrestrial?
Well, she said it herself. She originally said the map was rolled up and in a drawer in a cabinet. They took it out of the cabinet and they unrolled it and they looked at it. It wasn't until later on they made it into this special digital kind of map, which we know from the original story is just BS. And that's like, what's her name tried to tell me? Well, you've got to hit a regression tape. Well, I have them. I've actually played them on this radio station, and along with about 10 or 15 of their interviews. And, you know, so I'm actually quite well versed in the case now. It's just, and I don't know why they have such a hard time with this, but it's obvious what happened. They were picked up in Canada. And then when they were coming back, the United States picked them up to find out what the aliens had done. They were even doing, like, environmental studies on them. Some of the stuff they did is just classic containment when they think they're like what the disease control does today. When they think there's been a contaminant, they went in and tested for all of that. They were looking to see what kind of environment these people had been in, what had touched their skin. They knew they had been taken. And the funny part about Betty and Barney Hill, and this is something that Stanton Friedman and Kathleen Maldron don't like to talk to about, one of their best friends was a CIA operative. Their two people that lived in their house, their roomies, were Air Force. Most of their friends were Air Force. They were already tied heavily into the military, plus her sister had had prior sightings. They just they sound like they were abducted in Canada and mil-aired in the United States. And I've never heard any technologies in any of the books. Now, Kathleen said the new book's going to contain new stuff, and I'm always leery when you get new stuff 40 years after the fact, or 50 years after the fact. I'm thinking, yeah, well, there's no real way to go back and check this, is there?
Dee is in the chat room, and she's saying, I have read all the material on the Hills, and I have never heard or read anywhere that they saw paperback books.
Actually, in the audio interviews that I've played on here, she says it is a bound book. Actually, it's not paperback. It's a hardback book. She describes the case as leathery with paper inside. That's her own words. And I just played this not long ago. She describes it as a leather-bound book with paper pages inside.
Yeah, I can, well, Chuck from Houston wants to know what you think of the Billy Meyer case. Is it the real deal in his contact? Is he a keeper? What's the deal?
You know, Starship, I did think of that when I read that. I mean, I heard that about the Bible. Billy Myers, God, I hate getting around Billy Myers' case. I actually think that Billy Myers was contacted. I really think his original photos were legitimate. My problem is I don't know if he started buying his own ego stuff or that he just went over the hill, but somewhere along the line, he decided that he was going to hoax and add information to his case. And the reason I know this is Michael Horn had taken a bunch of his stuff and had it analyzed. Now, Michael don't like to talk about the bad parts, but he will tell you about the good parts.
Yeah, I've been in touch with him. He's called me a couple of times. Yeah. He emails me quite often.
I think it was either DreamWorks or it was either one of the guys who does, I think it was DreamWorks. But anyway, he brought the videos and the photography to him and asked him if they could duplicate it. And a lot of it they could duplicate, no problem, but there were several pictures that they said they could not duplicate exactly, which suggests those pictures are real.
Okay.
All the rest of the pictures, unfortunately, though, seem to be hoaxed or faked. So it looks like, I think initially he got lucky and got a picture or two. He had some contact. He got notoriety. People started talking to him. And then he started to fade, which happens in ufology when you're the flavor of the month. It's quite a thing that happens quite often, but I think he began to fade, and I think at that point he started hoaxing, and so I'm kind of mixed.
He just wanted to stay in the limelight.
I think he wanted to stay in the limelight. I think that's what it was all about. But, you know, he's one of the peace-loving lighters, and there are a handful of them out there that say that the human aliens are here to save the world and blah, blah, and blah, blah, and blah, blah. I got, look, and I said this to Michael Horn, I say this to every contactee of me, because I got a lot of contactees that tell me that they've never had a bad experience. And I always ask them the same question. Did E.T. call you up and say, hey, Bob, can I come pick you up this weekend and take you for a ride on the mothership? Well, if they didn't, you were abducted, which in this country is illegal and punishable by 25 years in jail. By another country, it's an act of war. So
taken without permission
is still
should
bad.
Not be really a pleasant experience.
And then to boot, we know that these guys lie. Or maybe lie is not the right word, but we do know that they tend to exaggerate information. Let's tell you, that'll work better. We know they tend to exaggerate because we found a long time ago that a lot of stuff in contactees, whether it's the humans, the reptilians, or the grays, there are a lot of base stuff that's the same. A lot of the hybrid procedures, a lot of the medical procedures, a lot of the testing of emotion and mental abilities, there's a lot of this that's basically the same across all three of these races. But then there's this stuff that just is so outlandish that you're sitting there going, what the hell? And then every contactee has a different ending. Well, they can't all be right. Obviously, they can't all be right. So some of them are exaggerating themselves, but some of them, the ETs, are just letting them hear what they want to hear. I think in a lot of cases, ET just scans your mind and says, okay, well, this will let them think this, and that'll make them feel better or what have you. Because some people actually think, you know, peace, love, and light's the way to be, and some people think the disaster of the world's the way to be. They feel more comfortable with those things. So I guess.
Do you think that what people call screen memories are really a part of the abduction phenomenon?
Well, in the old days, and this is something ICAR broke about 12 years ago. Actually, it was a little earlier than that, but in the old days, you used to get a contactee would remember seeing like an owl or a deer or a buffalo or a combination of things. And that's what they were. They were cover memories, screen memories, what have you. But they were out of sync and out of place memories, but still they were there. You know, you hear like a little girl say, I was riding my bike and I looked up and there was a deer standing in the middle of the road. But that's all they remember, nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing before that, nothing after that. Those memories seem to be real, but in the 90s, and I don't know exactly why this started happening, E.T. started changing the way they did stuff. For a while, we were like, damn, there's no missing time cases. What's going on? There's no abductions. And then we got a case where the couple had left the hotel at 11 o'clock. They got him on camera leaving the hotel at 11 o'clock. They went to the convenience store. They were changing shifts. The people at the convenience store remember them changing shifts. They went mm-hmm. out to the beach at 11:07 or something and had an experience, right? Well, they're leaving to go home the next day. They find a ticket in their car, a parking ticket, that was issued at 10 o'clock. Now, at 10 o'clock, they were still at the hotel, right? The cop mm-hmm. has the car and video. The time is on the camera. The ticket was written at 10 o'clock. But according to both the hotel and the clerks at the store, they were not in the area till 11 o'clock. Now, how the hell is that possible? We realized that contactees had started having gained time. They were being taken out of sync and put back either at the same time or right after the time or what have you. But they were actually being removed from the timeline, held on the side, and then brought back. And one of the other ways we found this out was a couple of times this has happened. We had one couple, we had had dinner with them. This is what's wild. We had had dinner with them the night before. They called the next morning and said they had been abducted. But there was something odd about the abduction. Both of them had a minimum of 3 weeks' worth of hair growth. Okay, now you can imagine a woman's underarms and legs after 3 weeks and no shaving and a guy's beard. But there was no doubt about it. The night before, they were hairless. The next morning, they were furballs. Now, the doctors couldn't explain no spontaneous growth of both people overnight. It's impossible. So the only other thing that would explain this is if they had been taken out of time and sequence for 2 or 3 weeks and more than allowed to shave. That's the only thing that would explain that. And then we've had cases where they've been...
But if you just had dinner with them the night before, then you knew they couldn't have been gone 3 weeks.
But if they were out of time sync, they could have easily been gone 3 weeks. They could have just pulled them out of the dimension, held them there for 3 weeks, did whatever they want, and then put them right back at the, you know, an hour after they took them, or an hour before they took them, for that matter. So as far as I'm concerned, or they're concerned...
But then wouldn't they have to alter your time sync also?
Just their time. Just their time. Because all they're doing is just taking them and doing whatever they are. But when they bring them back, they're putting them back relatively around the same time. And so as far as I was concerned, I was at home in bed. I didn't know nothing about it. And they put it as far as they were concerned, they were never even missing. But yet they had that on there. And that started in the mid-90s. And I actually talked to Daryl Sims about it. I said, Daryl, man, have you been experiencing this? And we got to talking about it and on the air, matter of fact. And he's like, you know, I think you're right, and he started checking into it, and a few other investigators started looking into it, and next thing you knew, and that's why even today there's not many missing time cases anymore. Every now and then you get one, but not often. Most of the time now you hear them talking about these weird time events that goes on in their homes and stuff. They changed, and the best I can see is they changed because of the researchers. Because, you know, after a while you start building up clues, and you can start telling. Like, we know that in Gulf Breeze, if you're down at there at the right time, you can actually witness alien abductions. And not only have I and my wife seen it, but at least 10 other people we've brought down with us down there have seen it as well. That's not including other people that have reported seeing it down there.
Now, is this somebody that you actually see them being taken, somebody in your group that you witnessed?
Actually, the last time we were down there, there was four of us. We were sitting on the beach, minding our own business, looking at the skies, chit-chatting, and they took the people on both sides. Actually, as far as we could tell, they took everybody up and down the beach on both sides of us. It was about 2:30 in the morning on Santa Rosa Island. All four of us seen it clear as like I'm watching a screen roll by on Powell Talk. But there's been several times that this has happened down there. One time we were walking.
Well, what do you mean you see it as clear as you can see
I've
this
I've seen
screen.
The aliens come up, take the people, drag them into this light and take them away.
So, which aliens did you see? Were they grays, reptilians?
Yeah, these the last two times, almost every time we've been down there, we see grays. As far as I know, Gulf Breeze belongs to the grays. There may be some other races down there, but they don't show themselves off.
Okay, well, if they're taking all these people around you, why didn't they take you?
Actually, because I think with the contactees, especially ones like us who are out there chit-chatting, and I think they want you to see it.
Because so you think if you took me down there that I could see that?
Yeah, we could try it. I tell this to everybody. You don't know till you try. And I got to tell you, the last two people I took, they haven't even talked to me since.
Oh, really?
Yes, they have not. And friends of them, they're like,
That's terrible. Because you scared them so bad?
We would, yeah. It just scared me. There's some people in the room, I think, right now. We went down one night, and we're walking through the fog, right, near Eglin Air Force Base. And you could see footprints. The girls were in the front, the guys were in the back. And you could see footprints in the sand between us, little tiny footprints. And we were like, what the hell, what the hell? Well, they slowed down, and we sped up a little bit, and there was two grays standing in between us in the fog. Scared the living, you know what? I like to scream like a little teenage schoolgirl there for a minute. But they were just standing there. And then when we got up to the gazebo, a friend of ours, Mike, from Canada, he had come down to help with Katrina. And there was a bunch of us that night that went down there, seven or eight of us. And we're sitting in the gazebo. And Mike's like, Joe, there's something moving in the dark up there on the top of this big old gazebo. And I'm like, you're crazy, Mike. Just chill. Look at, you know, look out, enjoy the weather. And then I caught something out the periphery. I was like, what the hell? And he said, I told you. I'm like, Mike, no. All of a sudden, this thing comes down. It was like it was just wild the way these things move and the way they go up and down walls and stuff. But it came down the side of the wall, and this pole went across. We all just all went in different directions.
Oh, my gosh. I guess so. I didn't know that you actually have a place where you can go and see them. Most of the times, what I've read and seen is somebody can be standing right there and not know that you've been taken. I didn't know you could see it being done.
That's a lot of times people, like a lot of times the spouse, if they happen, these days it doesn't happen as often. That's something else we've noticed over the last 10 or 15 years. A lot more of the contactees are marrying other contactees. But 30 years ago, a lot of times when they took them, they wouldn't take the husband or the wife. They would just take one because the other one wasn't a contactee. And, you know, so they would just never remember anything happening. But the kind, you know, that's why they're looking at their wife or their husband like, you've lost your mind. I was asleep in bed and nothing happened to you last night. You are a crazy, you know what. And, but, you know, but nowadays they seem to be marrying in family lines and you seem to be marrying other contactees. And that's an interesting thing, too. Contactees get married, they don't get divorced. Mm-hmm. They pretty much stay married. All the ones that I know that have met either on the internet or through the organization, and as a bunch of them, have gotten married and stayed married and are happy.
What is your advice to someone that, say someone's listening here and they've kept quiet, you know, they've either had missing time or, you know, their time has been sped up, like the case with the hair growing. You know, what's your advice to them? What should they do? Should they do anything? Is there a place they can go for help? Or,
well, first off, the thing is, and I say this to contactees all the time, do you really think about this before you ever contact any investigator, including myself? First thing I want you to ask yourself is, do you really want to know the truth? Because there are some things that I have personally experienced and other people experienced that you do not want to remember. You just don't.
So you're an abductee yourself.
Oh, yeah, but I didn't know until I got involved with this because I met a contactee, and I had no idea. And I didn't even know what drove me at the time. I spend a lot of money on this every year, and I had no idea what was driving me. And after about 10 years of research, I was actually sitting down one night reading a questionnaire, and I'm like, I'm checking them off going, well, shit, that happened to me. And I got about halfway through this questionnaire, and I had this awakening thought going, oh, man, I'm scaring the hell out of myself at the time, by the way. This is 20 years ago. And I'm like, nah, you're losing your mind, Joe. You're losing your mind. And the more this questionnaire I read, the more things I was checking off. And there was 50 questions. I think I checked off 47 of them.
So did you really think you were going crazy?
Oh, yeah, I did. Matter of fact, the person who got me involved with this, I thought they were nuts. I used to tell them all the time, you're crazy. Aliens do not come and get you. You are a Looney Tune. But then they're very articulate, very bright, high IQ, professional individual. They weren't getting anything by saying this but ridicule. So I had to take them serious. I was like, well, what the hell? Why would they possibly say, unless they're just nuts? Well, and then I started meeting other people. And then I learned that contactees weren't nutcases. A lot of them were doctors, politicians, lawyers. A lot of them that are lawyers, which really weirds me out, by the way. policemen, firemen, airline pilots, military pilots.
Well, so your advice is don't try to find out if you don't really want to know.
Yeah, I would question it hard before I found the researcher. And then if you need to know, and I do understand the need to know, I personally understand that. I understand the drive. It gets overwhelming sometimes. But if that's the case, I would find a reputable investigation organization, one that has experience in the field and has references. And there's only a few of us out there that have references, guys. Probably maybe five, maybe eight organizations that actually have references for this kind of research. Don't believe everything you hear. Don't believe the first thing research is here. And understand this, if you are truly a contactee or an abductee, you're probably 70% of what you think is right is wrong. Just know that going into it.
Well, what does that mean?
Well,
in other words, you haven't remembered things correctly?
Well, because I learned this a long time ago. The human mind has a way to exaggerate. People see things, and then they don't really understand it. So the mind just kind of, it's like the face thing, why people see faces in fires and faces in stars and faces on Mars. It's because, you know, when you stare at something long enough, our minds make it into a face. Well, it's the same thing. I mean, if you do this too long, or it's just what it turns into, so you just got to be careful. You got to be careful, because you will start remembering things that never actually happened. And then you'll start making stuff up to go along with what you did, because, frankly, some of the stuff that contactees are learning, they don't want to think about. And some of the stuff
they've seen,
they do not want to remember. I think a lot of them, especially the ones in their 20s and 30s or teens and 20s, I think a lot of them intentionally make these wild stories up around it to hide what's actually, because, man, there's some pretty horrific stuff goes on in those ages. And I mean horrific, borderline and just outright cruel. And I think they make these fantasy worlds up to hide that. I really, truly do.
What sort of cruel things do you think go on in those 20 to 30 age
groups? Well, I give you one example. One girl's laying there. She's invoking the name of Christ, saying, Christ saving, Christ saving, Christ saving. They reached in, pulled her eyeballs out, turned around and looked at her and said, now tell Christ to save you. They imaged it in her mind. That's pretty damn cruel. But they get way worse than that. They take off limbs and put them back. They psychologically torture you on a host of different realms. They got some pretty just nasty stuff that happens.
And what's their purpose in doing this? Well, what do you think their purpose is?
I think a lot of it is stress and analyzation. I think they're stressing the contactee to find out what they can take. Will they be a good candidate for what they're doing, or will they fall apart and not be any good for what they want? Because they want people that are mentally strong, physically strong, healthy people, and people that one thing we found with all major contactees, the only commonality I can find, a matter of fact, with all major contactees, is they're born survivors. You could drop any of them anywhere, and they're going to survive. They almost always come out on top. And it's a thing. Plus, all of them are empathic. It's one of the things we test for.
All of them are what?
Empathic. It means they can sense and feel, sense and send emotions. If you do not...
So they all kind of have a sixth sense, and when you're working with them, you can test for that?
Actually, a lot of them are quite psychic, or I should say quite telepathic. A lot of them are quite telepathic. The telepath tests are easy. They're easy to do. It's colors, numbers, and phrases. You just think of the phrase and they repeat it. And you'll be surprised how many times you'll think of a phrase and the person across from you repeats the phrase word for word. First time somebody did that, I looked up and said, well, that was luck. And then they said, I was thinking something else, which was kind of mean, and they repeated it. And I was like, shit. but empathics are a little bit harder to test. But you can tell, because an empathic person, especially if they're a strong empath, if you're sitting, and this is an easy way to find out, you may be sitting in a room. And you may be la 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 la, and all of a sudden you get really sad or really mad or really happy, but for no reason. But when you look up, you see some person standing there that's really mad or really sad or really happy, and the person sitting there, having all kind of fun, and you're like all in a good mood now. You've actually picked those emotions up and have sensed their emotions, and you can not feed off them, but they can change your emotional state. In the same aspect, we've seen this on many occasions where you'll take a contactee. And I've done this intentionally, made them really mad, and sent them to a room full of people. Within 5 minutes, everyone in that room will be furious. I mean, furious. And
wow.
I've said a word to them. And it's you know, these are things that are not that hard to test for. We can. It's fairly easy for any novice to check these things out, and you can find out if you possess these abilities or not. And you know, I have never met a contactee, abductee, keeper that is not empathic. I've even met a few that are telekinesis. They can do stuff with their minds. One girl, I made her so mad she slammed the door. I kept telling her, you're full of it, the front door just wham. I was like, oh, it was just the wind. So I went open again, wham. I was like, okay, well, that's enough of that. And there's been other times when other stuff that actually was worse than that happened. So we've seen it manifest itself in things. Some of them have much more advanced abilities than others. Some of them, or remote viewer, they don't call themselves remote viewers because they don't really remote view, but they're very telepathic. They see a lot of things. And a lot of them today, thanks to us and some other organizations out here that understand this and use this, we teach them to use them. When I'm doing business, or even when I'm cutting deals on the station, when I'm doing business, I actually use it. When I'm talking to a customer, I can sense if I'm going to close this deal or do I need to do something else to close this deal. And it works really well for me. At first I didn't realize what it was. Now that I understand it, it does really, really well. Oh, okay. But still.
Yeah. We're going over.
Well, go ahead. I'm just checking to see if Paul IM'd me while you're talking. Go ahead.
Okay. There's somebody that wants to know if you can have missing time and they can put you back in the same time area. Can they also take you backwards in time?
It's going back. You know, I've heard a couple people say about going back. I don't know, guys. I'm not going to say it's impossible. I'm not even going to say it hasn't happened, because I have heard a couple of cases where they seem to have gone backwards in time. Most of the cases I get, though, they seem to be taking out of time, like they're sitting on the side of time. And then when the aliens get ready, they just open the door and put you back in the same door they took you, for lack of a better way of explaining it, and it's the same time. I have on a couple of occasions, though, it seems like contactees have gotten back earlier than they left. Yeah, I know, that one's kind of weird. I've always wondered if they could run into each other, and would it cause a paradox if they did. But apparently not, because the aliens don't seem to worry about it. It's weird because, you know, you get these looping memories. And that's another thing, going back to the Betty and Barney Hill case. I think one of the problems always has been with the Hill case is there was three things with the Hill's case. There was the dreams, what Betty and Barney remembered, and what was regressed. And these are all three different, by the way, okay? What they actually remembered while awake was different than what they were talking about while being regressed, and also different than what was in their dreams. There was three different sets of memories here. Now, what's interesting about this, we learned with MILAB cases that there's three sets of memories. There's the alien memory, the military memory, and then the overlapping memory that keeps the two separate. But we've learned over the years, a lot of times, because the government isn't real good at covering memories up, the memories bleed together. So it makes it really hard to know what was going on. Because there was humans there, but there was aliens there, and then there was, like, technology there, but then there was alien tech. Well, that's because the two memories have merged together. In their head, and it's as far as they're concerned, it's all one event when it's actually more than one event, and we found that to happen quite often.
Well, now, but how can you tell that for sure? I mean, you say it was more than one event, but you know, they see the aliens there, they see somebody in a military type uniform. Well, you know, how can you be for sure it wasn't one event?
Well, there's three things that. First off, we know we have alien criteria for alien abductions. We have criteria for alien abductions. For military abductions, we have military criteria. And then there's a criteria, because occasionally there are cases where the military is present, or the alien is present when the military is, but there's a secret to this. Really, it's a kind of closely guarded secret at that. But there is a thing that when there's a military person or military presence and there's an alien present, it's usually one type of alien, and they're usually doing one type of thing. There sometimes will be hybrid presence, too, because, like in the case in Eglin, there was the eight women there being experimented on, and the one red-headed doctor, well, he's a hybrid. He's not an alien or a human. He's a hybrid. And there'll be one.
Do you say that because he had red hair? Because there's a lot of red-headed people.
No. This red-headed doctor has actually showed up now in like 100 different countries and probably more than 2,000 abductions. And they never describe him exactly the same. They always describe him as this big, tall, gangly kind of guy. But sometimes he has straight, sometimes he has curly, sometimes it's dark almond, sometimes it's light burnt. Sometimes his eyes are this color, that color, never human colors, by the way. So you can pretty much rule out that he's a human, but you can also pretty much rule out he's an alien, too, because of some of the features that they're describing. So he does appear to be a hybrid. There's almost always one of them present, and if it's a gray thing with the military, there'll be one or two grays present, and they usually are kind of standing off and watching what's going on.
Now, do you know this just from the thousands of documented cases, the criteria and all this? Is it developed from what people have told you their experience was, or what?
What we did was, we were working on these criteria for years when I was with MUFON, going back a long time now, when I was back with MUFON. The original case study was done with some friends of ours at MUFON. A couple of them are still there, by the way, and we got together, we got online back when computers were slower than snot, and we started comparing cases. You know, we had like 50 here and 100 there, 100. But anyway, after about 4 or 5 years, it came up to about 5,000 cases. We took that and we found all the similarities and created abduction criteria. Since then, since ICAR was founded in 1999 or 2000, I'm sorry, so it's 9 years old, I'll go on 10 years old. When ICAR was founded, we started using that criteria against the cases coming in, which was at least another 5,000 to 7,000 cases. So by doing that, we had an idea. So we took all of that, and then I got the radio station, and I started asking people like Bud Hopkins and Whitley Strieber and everybody else, you know, what do you think? What happened to you? What's your research show? And we started coming up with the same conclusions. And like I said earlier in the show, about 70 to 75% of abduction research is agreed upon. Where the disagreements really come in abduction research is more about the alien agendas than anything else. The basic experiments, the basic abduction types are pretty basic. It's pretty much agreed upon in ufology or in alien research, abduction research. It's pretty well agreed on what's going on. It's the agendas is where, and some of the other types of aliens that mysteriously pop in, is where the argument seems to be. And that's because everybody you talk to has a different agenda. But there is the
Okay,
Holocaust.
Because, you've spoken of different species. And how many species do you believe are visiting here?
We investigate 6 different species. As far as I know, that's all that's visiting the planet. I know I've heard Greer and M say 56. I have not seen any evidence of 56 species ever. And out of the 6 species we investigate, the browns and the tall whites, Charles Hall's tall whites, are skeptical. Because I'm not 100% that Charles Hall's... I believe Charlie, by the way, implicitly. I don't think Charlie is lying in any shape, form, or fashion. I just don't know if while he was out on the desert, the government didn't, you know, wreak havoc on his brain, do some kind of experiments, or plant some memories. Because I've only got like 3 people that have ever seen these guys. So I got to be very skeptical there. And then there's the brown ones that people say eat things, or people that I got to be skeptical with those. But there is
brown ones that eat people.
Well, they call them the cleanup crew. I don't know if they actually eat live people or not, but a lot of contactees call them the cleanup crew. Like if something's dead or someone's dead, they go in and clean it up and they eat it. I don't know. And like I said, we leave those in the outgoing box because we really don't know. We just know that we've got X amount of people reported them, so we have to take them serious. Charles Hall is a very credible witness, so we kind of have to take him serious. In the case of the brown guys, we've probably got 100, 150 different people that have seen these guys doing this stuff. And
well, what is the agenda, or is it different for each species,
you know,
for why they are visiting, or what?
Well, there seems to be some joint agendas, like the hybrid programs and stuff like that. They all seem to be, in some aspects, doing the same things, but then in other aspects, they seem to be doing stuff quite differently and looking into quite different things. So there seems to be a couple. I would honestly have to say, if I had to pick a number on agendas, I would figure there was probably a dozen or more probably way more than that going on, but I would say at least a dozen, at least, because you got probably 9 or 10 primary agendas with God knows how many sub-agendas running underneath that.
Well, give us an example.
Well, we got about a third of our contactees have this dream we call the Holocaust dream. What's interesting about it is they basically are describing the same thing. Well, none of this has been published. We don't really talk about it much. You know, like I'll give you a quick example. A girl was telling me about a dream she had had in Houston, Texas, by the way. They were burning bodies. There was bodies piled high, but there was no devastation to the buildings. The buildings were all intact. The cars were parked on the side of the streets. They weren't just stopped in the middle of the street. So whatever this was hit them, but it didn't hit them right away. Well, when you talk to the contactees, every contactee, by the way, all third of them that have had this Holocaust dream call it a pandemic. They don't say it's a meteor, an asteroid, or a flood. They call it a pandemic.
Like an illness?
Yeah, like an illness wiped out.
Like the Black Plague was, or...
And they say that there's military running around, picking up bodies, burning bodies, escorting people away. Some people seem to be naturally immune to it, which seems to be the contactees.
But they're also saying this was a dream they had, right?
Yeah, but it's one-third of the contactees we have. So now they're not having a dream at the same time. They're dreaming it at different times, but they're describing basically the same things. They'll be describing different cities or different areas, but they're describing the same stuff.
So how does that fit in with an agenda?
Well, these are all alien abductees. Every one of them is a contactee, is a known contactee. And they're not only a known contactee, but they're contactees from different groups, like the reptilians, the humans, and the aliens, and they're all having this one common dream. So the dream is very significant because all one-third of the contactees are having it. And it's the same contactees that talk about the containers on the ships. And see, and that's odd, too, because the one-third of these contactees are talking about these tubes on the ships where they keep bodies, or underground bases, or wherever they keep these bodies. And the other contactees that aren't having a Holocaust dream also talk about these tubes where they have these bodies. The only difference is they say they look like them.
The person in the tube looks like them?
Oh, yeah, they said. A couple of different people have told me this. They'll be standing in front of them, and they'll be, like, standing there with these things on their hands, and they'll see, like, their son or their father or their uncle or whoever. There'll be, like, 10 or 15 of them in a row. And everybody who sees them describes them the same way. It doesn't matter who they are. And certain things we don't give away because we use what we call keyword research. So, you know, when I'm talking to a contactee and they're telling me about these so-called tubes and these people, I'm looking to hear certain things. Because some of this stuff like you and I are talking about. So any person, I give you, another example. We get people that write into us all the time and they'll say everything correct.
They come up with the keywords you're looking for.
Yeah, no, they come up with what they've heard me say. They'll say everything correctly, but they won't have those particular words that I did not say.
Because you don't use these keywords.
So they won't be in there. And I know if they're not in there, they're not telling me the truth. Because when you're describing some of this stuff, you're going to use this no matter what. Because it happened, you know, like the breeding experiments or the milking machines or stuff like that. These are all things that a contactee going through his experiences sooner or later are going to mention. Because
it all sounds so sci-fi.
It is sci-fi. It scares the hell out of me, too, and I still, to this day, don't like talking about it. I don't know how I got into this research or why I do this or why I even come out and talk about it sometimes, because something like the other night when I was doing a show on Golf Breeze and I was talking about the black thing, I scared myself.
Well, because, I mean, it is scary, and... to think that people are being taken against their will and they're having torturous things done to them. And just like you say, you know, people better be sure that, you know, if they suspect that they want to, if they think they've been taken, you know, you better ask yourself, do you really want to know, or would you like to go on with your regular kind of life that doesn't have all this turmoil mixed in it?
And I tell people, even if you can deal with the stuff that happens in your 20s and all, when you start asking these questions and you start getting answers, you can't really stop. And most of them either end up working in the fields or doing radios or writing books, or they just can't.
Okay,
leave.
When you say you can't really stop, it's just because
it's
you're
like a
driven.
Drug addiction.
It's like a drug addiction.
It is. It's like an addiction. It's you can't get away from it.
It's like reading a good book and you can't put it down.
You could ask Linda, if I could get back what I spent just in the last 10 years, not in the last 26, but just what I spent in the last 10 years on the radio station and an iCar, I could have retired, and retired comfortably.
Uh-huh.
I mean, quite comfortably at that. Katrina alone, I didn't even tell you what I dumped for the year. Katrina, year after, you don't even want to know how much money I put into this. More than most, probably double a lot of people's salaries.
Uh-huh.
I had the money, and it was, you know, I figured it was a gift from Katrina, and I might as well do something with it. But really and truly, if I could really take that money, I could be retired sitting on some island somewhere, living on some beach house somewhere, and not have to be worried about bills. But no, I can't let it go. And once people get into it, and then there's this other little problem, and some of my friends in the room who are investigators will contest to this. Ufology in general, when I got involved in it publicly, I have to tell you, I was very disappointed. There was a lot of charlatans, a lot of scams, a lot of BS. Probably 85% of what we were looking at was just garbage. And, you start meeting these people, and some of these people were like heroes to me in the field. And you find out they're only in it for the next book deal or the next conference or the ego or what have you. A lot of them were just simply not in it for the right reasons. And
mm-hmm.
then there was the other problem. After 30 or 40 years of ufology, there was no real answers. None. And
well, there still doesn't seem to be any, though.
Yes, not in ufology, but there is in abduction research. There's a lot of answers in abduction research. But in ufology, there's not, because chasing skies and the lights isn't going to tell you anything.
Uh-huh.
All you're going to say, bottom line is, even if you've seen a flying saucer hovering over your damn head, the only thing you can say is, I saw a flying saucer hovering over my head. It doesn't even prove that it's alien. It just proves that it was a flying damn saucer.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't prove anything else. It could have been a government experiment. Bottom line is, I think last time, Wikipedia, somebody did it, there's something like 36 million UFO pictures on the Internet. 36 million. Now, by Harvard's own number standards, their own numbers game, at least a full 20% of them should be legitimate. But the only thing that matters is if only one of them is legitimate, it proves extraterrestrial contact. So the numbers alone suggest that not only is the planet being visited, but it's being visited at a much larger scale than any of us would like to think about. Which also tells you that the government has to be somewhat informed, because when there's that much movement, it's hard to keep it a big secret.
So, and that's the reason that you... When did the military abduction start?
Melinda Leslie has them back as far as the 1950s. For me, when I got involved with this, Betty and Barney Hill, for me, was when I thought they had started. But did you ever notice something about the Betty and Barney Hill case? Betty and Barney Hill were a black and white couple in 1961.
I've heard about that. I just learned that they were a black and white couple maybe 3 weeks ago. No, I never realized that.
Yeah, and no one ever said anything about it. You don't find that just the least bit odd?
I do for that time period.
Oh, yeah, for that time period. They should have been all
over them. Yeah, because, I mean, nowadays, an interracial couple is fairly common. But, and I thought, in all of those newspaper accounts and stuff that I've read and the stuff, nobody even mentioned, which I think is very strange for that time.
Well, here's something a little strange for you. I had a government witness. And this guy, I can actually prove who he is. He's in the government. He told me this about a decade and a half ago, and I told him he was crazy. He said that the Betty and Barney Hill were a fake abduction that was used to bring the black and white couple into the general press without them being interrogated about being black and white, to just show the people, look, here's a black and white couple, just to keep them being shown in the whole nine yards. Because everybody was more interested in God, aliens picked them up. They could have cared less if they were black and white. Whether that's true or not, I don't
know. Well, that doesn't really make sense to me.
It didn't make sense to me either. It still doesn't, but, you know. They did get a lot of press. They got a lot of TV time. They got a lot of air time.
And you don't know of any interviewers that say, well, let's talk about how you've coped being a mixed race.
Nobody
even brings it up, or?
I listened to 15 audio interviews from 1963 to 1980, and I watched 5 different TV things and 3 videos, and not one time did anyone ever address the fact that they were a black and white couple. Not once. And I just
and we weren't as we weren't as socially or politically correct back then as we are now.
Back then, in the South in 1961, if you were a black and white couple, you'd have been taken out to the road and beat. So
I
just have an issue that no one said anything about this at all. It goes beyond reality.
And what is the reason you think that they didn't? Now say it again.
Oh, it's
they
not
didn't
my
bring
reason.
It up because
I still
why?
Think they're a military abductees. But this gentleman said that the government was using them to put an interracial couple into the press without making the emphasis be an interracial couple.
Okay.
He said he was using
Why would the government care if an interracial couple
Because there
was
a lot of problems
press.
Then. There was a lot of hatred going on. There was buses being...
Well, yeah, but...
Well, this was a good way to show the public a couple that weren't fighting, weren't being hated on, and that you could accept them for what they were because it didn't matter that they were black and white. Aliens had abducted them. That was the only thing important. It wasn't the fact that they were black and white that was important. It was the fact that aliens abducting them was important. So it's just
but at the same time, the government doesn't want to acknowledge that people are being abducted or that we're being visited.
The government uses this all the time, like Roswell. The government uses UFOs as a cover-up all the damn time. Probably 80% of what people think is aliens or UFOs has something to do with the government. Like, I'll give you an example. In the late 70s, early 80s, out of Colorado, California, Nevada, New Mexico, and one other state out there, they kept reporting these black UFOs. They were diamond-shaped, triangle-shaped, but they kept reporting them. Come to find out, they were the X-117 stealth fighter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well,
and if you had never seen one of those before, you would have thought that was out of this world because that was pretty funky.
Especially back in 79, you would have definitely thought it was an alien craft. Now, today we know better, but now they're seeing the TR-3s, and what's odd about the T-3s, the black flying triangles, is the fact that they're showing up like in Florida near Eglin, which is a testing facility for the Air Force. They're showing up in New Mexico, Colorado, California, Arizona, which is the same testing areas as the X-117 was.
Well, I've often wondered if what was seen around Stephenville was some sort of military...
Oh, by the way, David, I agree. I actually think Barney was a contactee, by the way.
Okay, let's hear about that. I saw that question, but let's tell the listeners. If you have the question, tell them.
Well,
the
I was reading what David just wrote in the room. And, the thing of it is I said this on the air, and I said this at the lecture. I think Barney was the longtime contactee. I think Betty, it was more wishful thinking. I really think Barney was the contactee. And it was just because of some of his mannerisms and some of his problems he had psychologically. You know, he had been seeing a shrink for a while before this had happened. And I just think that...
Okay, what was a mannerism that he had that led you to believe this?
Dumpy, nervy, glitchy. He just was antsy. But he was very orientated. He was very attention to detail, which is common stuff for contactees. Contactees are very detail-oriented. They just can't help themselves. I don't know if it's an after effect from having telepathic communication or what it is, but they're very detail-orientated. All of them are. And Barney was very detail-orientated. And Barney would never accept the fact. He was very hard-programmed against accepting the fact that there was aliens involved, whereas Betty just automatically assumed they were aliens involved. So I really do think Barney was the long-time contactee in that. I mean, and we're going by abduction criteria. And I said this to Kathleen Maldren and to Stanton Friedman. Betty and Barney Hill do not fit, in the case in the United States, does not fit abduction criteria for any of the aliens. Matter of fact, none of the...
For any of the six?
Yeah, but none of the descriptions of anything... Any of the aliens or any of the people or anything they've seen fit any aliens that have been investigated by anyone. But then Barney describes men in black pants, black boots, black shirt, duck-billed hats. This is common black ops. Common. This is just... He described the black ops operation to the T. And things like, you know, they flagged them down on the side of the road and brought them in. They looped their arms underneath their arms. This isn't stuff the alien does, walks them up the stairs. But when you listen to Barney and the regression, and he starts talking about seeing their face or trying to, and this is another common thing for contactees, abductees, they'll look over the shoulder to try to look. Well, that's not actually what they're doing, but it's their way of trying to get a peek at the alien. And you will hear them the first time they do this. They will scream. I mean, I guess it's the shock.
Okay,
of the
so
heart.
Say this again. A contactee,
well,
a mannerism is to look over their shoulder a lot?
Well, no, an abductee under regression or under hypnosis, an abductee a lot of times under regression will describe looking over their shoulder to look at what's behind them. And then when they do it, a lot of times they will scream in horror. This
mm-hmm.
is actually common.
Okay.
And it's because they don't want to look at the alien face. So they won't look ahead of them, and they won't look side to side to see what's standing on them. It's like they're trying to peek. It's the mind's way, basically, of coping with this is what it is. And,
oh.
And in one of Barney's regressions, he's talking about this. And a keyword, as a matter of fact, that's what got my attention. And then all of a sudden, he just let out a scream from hell. You can hear this man is physically scared. When you listen to this clip, there's no doubt, and he's under regression at the time, there is no doubt that something has physically scared this man beyond belief. There's just no doubt about it whatsoever. He is petrified.
Well, you know, this year in Eureka Springs, Linda Howe showed a film of one of the guys from Rendlesham Forest being regressed. And it was amazing to me. I mean, this guy was shaking all over from head to toe. It was obvious he was terrified.
And that's the thing. I mean, you can get under a good regression, which there's not many of, but under a good one, you can get stuff. But in all fairness, the Betty and Barney Hill thing, and not to pick on the doctor, I don't think he was a bad doctor. I just don't think he'd ever done anything like this before, and he just went on haphazardly through there. And I don't think he knew to look for different memories, like that there may be government memories or there may be alien memories. He didn't know that. There's no reason to look for them. And somebody asked me the other day, was I hating on the Hills or the investigators? No, I'm not. But let's be honest. In 1961, they didn't know the first thing about alien abduction or military abduction. In 2009, we actually know quite a bit. And I'm not the only researcher. And now, in all fairness about the background, and I got to be honest about this, a lot of the mainstream researchers agree with the Hill findings. They don't disagree with it. That's why I got asked to present it at the S conference, because they were asking around, and people said, you know, Joe's got a damn good argument for this. And when you really sit down and go really through the different interviews and the audio and the hypnosis, there's no doubt that they were abducted and then re-abducted by the government. And there was a predisposition. See, Kathleen Maldron told me there was no predisposition to aliens in the family. But then to come to find out, her mom, Kathleen's mom, had had UFO sightings. So there was a predisposition.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You know, so I was like, there was a couple of things that she wrote in the last book that when we asked her about them, she didn't remember them. That's never a good sign. Never at all.
Okay, so you asked her a couple of things that were in the book, and she did not remember it?
Well, what happened was, we read the thing, formulated the lecture, sent her a copy of the lecture, then she rebutted the lecture by sending it back to me. When she rebutted it, she rebutted some of the stuff that she wrote. I was like, well, what's going on?
You wrote it.
Yeah. Thinking, wait a minute, girl. You should remember what you wrote. You wrote it. I'm not the damn writer. And I remember.
Well, there's a couple of things in the book, so we can look them up. We might look them up.
Actually, in the lecture, I list them page by page.
Oh.
Actually, in the lecture, it's listed. I'd have to go listen to it to tell you what the pages are, but they're actually listed page by page. It was a really hard-hitting thing. It's really convincing evidence, and it's a tough case to get away from. Anyway it goes, at least Kathleen Maldron has admitted to the fact, at least from the point of the abduction forward, that they were having military abductions, which suggests that they were having prior to that. Kathleen just got a new book out, and she don't want to change her mind midstream, and I don't blame her. She's got a new book hitting the street this year. And I'm not trying to take anything away from her, because I actually like the lady. I think she's a really nice lady. But when it comes to abduction research and military research, she's not even in the same league that we're in.
But Stanton wrote that book with her, didn't he?
Yeah, but Stanton's not an abduction researcher. Stanton don't know the first damn thing about alien abductions. understand is a Roswell MJ-12, and I would never, the only matter of fact, and I've done this before, matter of fact, the only person that I would ever get in question stand with would be with D. Andrew, and I actually brought them to, there's a show, UFO Undercover, with D. Andrew and Stanton Friedman, talking about Roswell. And Dee's at least as adverse as well versus Stan. I think she's actually a little better in some areas. She actually got him on a couple of things in the interview. But that is his mainstay. He's not a contactee researcher, and he's not a military abduction researcher. And I stay out of the UFO stuff because really that's Dee's field. I pick on Dee about Roswell all the time because I just like to aggravate her. But I do defer judgment to Roswell, to her, as far as the organization's concerned. I do defer to her on Roswell because she's just that much better versed in it than I am. And I got my issues with Roswell, but I got my issues with everything. So, and she's got a good argument. She's convincing, and I leave it to her. And that's just the way it should be. She leaves the abduction stuff to me, and it works really good for both of us.
Well, what about you? Have you been regressed?
Actually, I have been under hypnosis before, and I didn't like it. I have to be honest with you. I didn't feel comfortable. I don't like to be out of control. I guess that's why I never did heavy drugs when I was young. But I don't like to be out of control, so it just wasn't good for me. It didn't really. I kept waking up.
So they really couldn't get you under.
Yeah, they would get me under, and then I would experience something, and then I'd be wide awake. I'd just be sitting there wide awake going, what the hell just happened? You know, either shaking or sweating or whatever, but I'd be wide awake. And the same thing with Linda. She's been regressed a few times, but she just, you can't really keep us under long enough. We'll get some information. Matter of fact, we had some wild experiences, and this is about 12 years ago, and we were sitting on the couch. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning. We had just were completely exhausted and wore out. We were doing this little regression to recover a memory that had happened to Linda and I, and Linda was trying to recover it. And as we were starting to recover the memory, next thing we know, the house starts filling with lights. Well, we don't know what happened. I woke up the next morning with 3 puncture marks in my back, one on each side of my spine and one on top of my spine. I actually took the pictures and went to...
Okay, what do you mean the house started filling with light?
The house started filling with light. It was like we were sitting there, and then it started getting brighter and brighter and brighter, and then the next thing we knew, it was morning. And that, it never recovered anything else after that on that. It was just the house started filling with light.
Well, did your wife have marks, too, when you woke up?
Uh-uh.
Okay, well, here's the thing. I could go to bed tonight, and I could actually have a dream about aliens, and I've often wondered since I started all this, why haven't I, but I've never dreamed about them. So it could just be just a dream. That doesn't mean that I've been taken. But I have a friend now that claims to be a contactee or abductee.
Yeah, I know one of your close friends is a contactee, but I'm not going to get into that.
Taken multiple times, but it's remembered as a dream. Well, what's to say that, you know, this person hasn't just dreamed about aliens a bunch of times?
Sometimes that's true. Angela, sometimes it's true. Sometimes they just are dreams.
But then this person also wakes up with marks.
Yeah, well, in all fairness, most of the time, the first way that this manifests is usually in your dreams. Usually it's your subconscious way of dealing with this. It starts manifesting in your dreams. And that's usually the first clue for someone to start checking into it to see what else may be going on. And then you can find out if it's just dreams or if it's not, but... when you start waking up with scoop marks, like on my left foot, there are 3 perfect scoop marks. And you can see they got these weird star patterns in the center of them. I asked the doctor about it one time. He said it looked like somebody used a laser or scalpel or some kind of burn or heat instrument on your foot. He asked me what kind of surgery I'd had. I said, none. He said, well, Joe, I'm telling you, that's some kind of surgery. I said, well, doc, I've never had anything done to my feet ever. You know, and it's like when I went in for the 3 puncture marks on my spine, he was kind of freaked out about them because you could see the one looked like it actually penetrated his spine. The other two made these looping marks along the side of it, and he wanted to know what the hell it was, and I was like, I just woke up with him. By the way, he didn't believe me.
Well, do you think that you have been given a mission by one of these species, you know, that it's your job now to investigate these things and let people know what you're finding out? I mean, do they want that exposure that you're giving them?
Well, you know, for me, it's kind of weird. I could say yes to that. I could say no to that because I found myself in some precarious situations after talking about particular topics. I've been threatened by, I don't want to say the government, but I've been threatened by whatever you want to call them, men in white.
Why don't you want to say the government if you think that's what it is?
Well, I have been threatened because they're not actually the government. It's not like Obama's government or Bush's government or anybody's government like that. It's these people have some kind of government ties or funding or backing or what have you because they couldn't get away with what they do without having it. But
well, what kind of threats have you received?
Hell, they showed up at my job site, told me they'd make me and my family disappear. This is what they told me. They said, you do know that y'all go on long rides that it would be no big deal for an 18-wheeler or something just to roll over y'all and it would just be an accident. And they said this in front of 20 people.
Well, that seems sort of dumb. Well, why would they say it in front of 20 people?
Because this is what's so funny about this. And I know my poor listeners have heard this a million times, but I'm standing on a roof at work. Got a crew up there. We're replacing the roof. And I'm just walking around bitching like I always do when I'm at work. And these guys pull up in a white tinted van with a white van, not white van, but a white SUV with tinted windows. Two guys get out there wearing what looks to be gray suits. I didn't notice they were Armani until I walked up on them. Really nice gray suits. He kept putting his finger, like waving to come down here. And I'm asking the guys, any of y'all, because you could tell they were feds. I'm like, any of y'all in trouble with the feds? Paid your income tax? What the hell's going on? Why the feds out here? And he kept waving his finger. So I walked down the ladder. I go over there. As I'm walking up to the guy, one of the guys unbuttons his jacket, takes one finger, pulls his jacket over his 9mm or his 45, whatever it was, so I could see it. And he put it there. And that's when he started saying something else to me. And about five of the guys started walking down the ladder. And then the other guys came down the ladder. And they're all walking over here at this point because they're getting a little nervous. I guess they were worried about what these guys were going to do. I was their boss. I guess they wanted to make sure they were going to get paid, but they start walking over. A couple of my friends of mine, they start walking to see what's going on. And about seven or eight of them got right up to me, and the guy said something to them about stopping or what have you, or just something, and they stopped. And he told me, he said, because I was hosting Wake Up USA at the time, he said, we like what you're doing. We want you to continue what you're doing. Know that you have some friends and some places. But know this, if you continue to talk about the alien agenda, you may have an accident, is basically what he said.
Well, why? Because anything about the alien agenda is just speculation, right?
Yeah, unless you're correct.
Okay.
The night before this happened, Daryl Sims and I had got into a fairly heated conversation about the alien agenda, and we got into some pretty deep stuff. And actually, I don't even think it was Daryl, but we had gotten into some pretty stuff that I rarely ever talk about with anybody but close friends and close researchers. Research that we in the organization consider to be very guarded information.
Well, what did you mention that night that you think got you in trouble?
Well, we talked about, you know, the reptilians might be native. We talked about some of the agendas. We talked about colony worlds. We talked about
But you were threatened over the agenda you were talking about. What was that?
Well, that's what we were talking about. We were actually talking about some part of what was discussed that night was the reptilians being native to planet Earth. Part of also what was talked tonight was the off-world colony and the off-world council meeting place, whatever they call it. And these were things that we were talking about. It's not stuff you ever really hear about, but it is stuff that contactees talk about all the time. It's just we don't make it.
Okay, well, wait a second. Let's back up. You said reptilians that are native to the planet. How can they be alien if they're native?
Well, because as far as you're concerned, they're alien. That's a human assumption. See, we've talked about this. A lot of people assume that they're aliens, but we don't know that. We know the reptilians ruled this planet for 500 million years. And if you ever go look at Harvard, did a regression of a raptor and brought it to present-day time, it looks like what these people call reptilians. It kind of looks like a cross between a gray and a reptilian, honestly. And we do know that every human on a planet has a reptilian section in their brain. And according to Sumerians and the Egyptians, the reptilians bred with the humans and created the race that's here today. They made it self-aware. The Christian Bible says that as well. The serpent gave the apple to Eve, and she became self-aware. She asked, why do I have to, you know, why am I here? And which was the first thing she did was clothe herself. And why? Because she knew she was naked. But, you know, things like this, they don't want you talking about this because this does, it goes against evolution. It goes against creationism. These are things that they don't want discussed in the general public. Because it's
and you think that's why you were threatened?
We were threatened because we were specifically talking about the reptilians being here and the off-world colonies and the Holocaust dreams.
That well, was did Daryl Sims have someone come and visit him also?
Actually, that was just what I was saying. That wasn't actually Daryl. Daryl was a week before that we were talking about a different alien agenda.
Oh, okay. Well, whoever that was you were talking to, who was it?
No, nobody else got threatened over it. Nobody else. But, of course, the next day I came, or the next, I think it was 3 days later, I came and got on the radio and talked about it again. And said, hey, look, you know, I don't know if y'all listen or not. We'll leave it alone. We'll move on to the next thing. And,
so what did you say to this man that threatened you in a gray Armani suit that said, you know, shut up about the alien agenda?
To be honest, Angela, the first 20 minutes of conversation, I was being a real ass. Because really, I had 20 big guys to back me up. Even with guns, they weren't a match for us. And I was being a real ass, and that's when he mentioned my wife and my son. He actually mentioned my son first. And I just... After that, it was over with for me. I wasn't even going to argue with him anymore. I was like, okay, whatever y'all want. That was the end of it. They knew it. I knew it. It wasn't even no reason to go there anymore.
Have you ever seen him again?
On a couple occasions. We've seen him in some odd places. And matter of fact, Linda and I...
You think they're watching you pretty closely?
No, not all the time. I think from time to time when we're doing stuff, they're watching. Linda and I had made a trip. We planned a trip to Gulf Breeze. And we were going down to do some alien abduction research with some friends. Well, that night, we decided we were going to hit some of the hot zones between here and there on our way there. And we were way back up in the Honey Island Swamp, and we seen this white SUV following us. Now, it's like 3 o'clock in the morning. We're in the middle of nowhere. I mean, the middle of nowhere. And here's this SUV, and it's just staying like a mile behind us. And Lynn and I are talking. And we had realized before, we had seen them like at Impostados, they used to put one of those dishes where they could listen. We used to have an abduction meeting once a month. And they would sit out in white SUVs with those listening devices and listen. We've actually challenged them.
Did you say white SUVs?
White SUVs with tinted windows.
Okay.
And we've seen them on a bunch of occasions. But anyway, we're driving along, we're talking. So I told Linda, I said, you know what, we'll just keep going straight and we'll take the back way into Florida. So I sped up to about 75. And I'm going straight, right? Well, I just hook a right turn on this road going through the bike. I mean, I just hooked it. We all slide down the road and stuff. This guy went past the road, slammed on his brakes, and starts turning around.
Mm-hmm.
And by this time, I'm doing like 105 miles an hour through the middle of the swamp. So I headed to the casino because I knew it was a public place.
Mm-hmm.
So we pull up at the Grand Casino. And I'm like, well, you know, maybe it's just I'm crazy, you know, but he did slam on his brakes and back up. But we were trying to play it off as maybe we over-exaggerated, over-reacted or something.
Right.
So I'm standing there talking to Linda, and we're locking up the car, and I look over the balcony to throw my cigarette out, and lo and behold, who's pulling in underneath us?
The white SUV?
Sure enough. I was like, look at this. And I even walked down there to make sure. I went and looked at the plate, because when it went by us, we seen he had government plates. And I went down and looked at the plate, sure enough. I was like, they were government plates. Yeah, they even knew where we were going. And a couple of these occasions, my stepfather used to be a state trooper. I actually got the plate numbers and had him run them. And they came back unregistered.
Oh,
he asked me if I got the wrong number, and I gave him a complete description of everything. I said, no, that's what was listed. He said, well... He said either very high security or they just don't exist, one or the other.
Well, you know, I've had people ask me, you know, tell me to be careful in things. But
you should be careful.
I did. Nobody's bothering me, but I did go to see someone that was considering investing in a project that I was working on. And actually, he had already said yes, he would invest. And I hadn't been home but maybe 3 hours, and he called me and said, who did you lead to me? Because we have white SUVs here, and they have government plates. And,
yep.
And where he lives, nobody would go in that area specifically unless they were going there to see him or some of his tenants. I said, I don't know. I haven't seen anything like that.
Yeah, we call them the men in gray or the new men in black, whatever you want to call them, because they're not driving. They're driving white SUVs with tinted windows and government plates. They're very well dressed. And they're very well mannered, but they will mess you up if you don't. It's not even no doubt. There's no doubt when you're talking to them that they will. There's just no doubt about it. And we've had dealings with them on and off for 15, 18 years. But it's low grade harassment or surveillance is not that uncommon for contactees, because a lot of times they'll monitor when they find out someone's a contactee. A lot of times they will monitor the contactee to find out if they're a good candidate for MILAB. So they'll monitor them. So it's low-grade harassment, listening to your phone calls, listening to your cell phone, watching you driving around, seeing where you're going. Because honestly, Angela, they're looking for the same things we are. ET does not know as much as everybody would like to think they know. I mean, the government doesn't know as much about ET as they'd like us to think they do. And a lot of things, like agendas, I think they're looking for the same things we are. And I think it's one of the reasons why the station's monitored and other stations are monitored. Different hosts are harassed, different contactees are harassed. And then there's a whole group of contactees out there that call themselves communicators. They say
what does that
aliens
mean?
Want them communicating their stuff out to them. There's about a dozen of them that I know of. They're all famous contactees like Miriam Delicato, Kay Wilson, Neer Isley, Melinda Leslie, Leah Haley.
Well, okay, one of those names to me sounds, I don't know, I connected something with like saying this is going to happen in the future, somebody, but it didn't come to pass, did it?
I don't know. There's this thing that if they've been here, for me, it would be easier if this only started happening 50 years ago, because then I could understand a lot more of what's going on. But if it really truly started 10,000 or 50,000 years ago, you gotta wonder. They pretty much should know everything there is to know about us after that much time.
Well, you would think so, yeah.
Yeah, especially if there's...
And what else, you know, why would they still be taking people for DNA and things like that?
And that's the thing. Not only why would they be doing it, but what are they doing with the hybrids? What are they doing with all these sperms and ovaries and, I mean, all these eggs they're taking, all these hybrids they're creating? What the hell are they? They're not putting them back on Earth. What are they doing?
And Joe, you really believe that's happening, that they are impregnating women?
If you go back and do some research in the mid-80s, there's about 5,000 cases that had been reported to... I forgot what you call them, the medical institute. They call them missing baby cases. Because the only thing that these women had that was the same that they were contactees, and that was found out later after the fact. They were going to the doctors and having blood tests and ultrasounds, a whole 9 yards, and they were pregnant. They seen the baby, they were pregnant, no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 3 months down the line, they weren't pregnant. Well, the doctors were saying, well, spontaneous abortion or this, that, or the other thing. But
right.
The problem was, is when they tested it, did an ultrasound, there had been no, as far as they could tell, the hormones were back in balance, and there was no damage anywhere. It's like the doctor said, as far as I can tell, you were never pregnant. And if they had gone to a different doctor, the doctor said you were never pregnant. It was whatever they called it, hysterical pregnancy or something. But these women had blood tests, and some of them had blood tests and ultrasounds. They were pregnant. And then at 3 months...
It appeared as if nothing.
As far as the doctor's concerned, they had never been pregnant. Now, I always found that intriguing. I didn't know what it meant. And it didn't mean it was alien, by the way.
Yeah.
They all said, now, all these people said they were contactees, but even that still doesn't mean that's not what it was. But what always bothered me about this is, as best I could tell, they quit doing it that way. When it got too public or too many people were paying attention to it, they seemed to have changed. So there does seem to be a reaction to what investigators do. The aliens do seem to react to their environment and their surroundings.
Well, that kind of says that the aliens don't want to be found out.
But see, that's the thing. Somebody said, people always ask me about disclosure. There's already been disclosure. Everybody that ET wants to know that they're here already knows. And the bottom line is E.T. don't give a blank if the other 5 billion people know. They don't. They don't care.
I think they should care. I want to know, but, you know, they never show themselves to me, or I don't have any kind of contact or anything, and that's probably what it would take for me to really get it through my thick skull.
That's what it took for me, and I got to be honest with you. When I first got involved with this 26 years ago, and I said this earlier, that I thought all these people were crazy. Not until I had my own personal UFO experience did I even start to take this seriously. And then I didn't realize until older in life that I had had some experiences when I was younger. I guess I had just blanked them out. But not until I had my...
Well, you can say disclosure has already happened, but you know, as far as who they want to know, but, you know, really, Joe, disclosure hasn't happened because, you know, it would have to be a widespread acceptance before it would be disclosure.
Well, the contactees know, and the government knows. That's disclosure. Who else needs to know? The people that want to know, but they don't need to know. The people that need to know, know.
That's so the aliens know. Have a need-to-know basis also.
Pretty much, as best I can tell. You know what, though? In all honesty, I really don't think the aliens care that much. I don't think that they would care that much if they were found out. Because really and truly, they don't really seem to try to hide themselves. There's been several mass sightings and several mass abductions. I think they figured out a long time ago that in general, back in the old days, they were worshipped as gods. But in today's society, they figure most people just ignore what they do. Because really, there's been a lot of... Mexico City, 1 million people saw a UFO. 1 million people! And nobody wants to take it. There was like 10,000 hours of videotape. And nobody wants to... take them serious.
Okay, so here we go, Joe. What do we got? 8 minutes left?
Yeah, we'll go, 7 minutes, something like that.
Okay. Tell me something that you've never told anybody else, that you've never spoken about publicly.
I don't know if I can. I might have to kill you afterwards. Don't
come on! Let's get to the juicy stuff.
Don't come beat me up like Greer got beat up for telling a guy he's going to kill him either. Let me think if there's anything I can tell you that would be... I'm trying to think. Let me think.
You have something good.
Let me think. Look at y'all.
Of course, all of this is good, huh?
Oh, I'm watching the virtual auditorium. It's like, I just can't think of nothing right offhand. Nothing. Everything I think of, I'm like, no, you can't say that. No, you can't say that. No. I've already said about the blue plasma. All right. I will tell
you. Said about the what?
The blue plasma, but I've said that on the air before, so we're not going to do that. But, I will tell you this. One of the aliens' eye pupils, their pupils, okay, this is abduction criteria, closely guarded abduction criteria. One of the alien pupils are almost identical to cat pupils, almost identical. And the color of their eyes is a color not have seen on this planet in any shape, form, or fashion. It's a recognizable
color. Well, you know, that
color.
Is one of the things that Travis Walton has said is their pupils were like cat pupils, but he said they had brown eyes.
Yeah, him, they probably
did
have
brown human color.
Eyes. Well, everybody gives me a color, but when you push them and you get it, when you really push them, they're like, well, I can't really describe it. Like, I'll give you an example. One lady the other day is telling me about this particular alien's eyes, and she says, it's kind of a burnt armor, it's kind of an orange, it's kind of a red, it's kind of a yellow, it's kind of a brown, and it's all kind of effing meshed together until it makes an eye color. Well, that really doesn't make any sense. It does to me, because I've heard it more times than I can think of. But to the contactee, it's like the blue plasma. People kept telling us about this weird blue color. They said it was like a blue, inside of a cobalt blue, inside of another cobalt blue. It was just this blue surrounding sense of blueness that made you feel blue. I don't know how to explain it, but come to find out it's a blue plasma that the grays use is not only a fuel, but they use it as food, and they also immerse humans in them to help them heal or recover from abductions. And we found this out by accident because all these contactees kept telling us about this blue light, blue liquid, blue this. They all had this color blue in common. But none of it made any sense because they all described it different. And finally, because we got another trick we started doing about a decade ago, where we program contactees to ask questions. 10, 20, 50, how many of you can find? One of the questions were at the time, what is this blue color? And the first 10 I ever did this with, all 10 came back the next day and said it's a blue plasma. All 10 of them the next day came back and said it's a blue plasma. And then since then, we've done this many more times to find out what it was.
Well, when you're talking about the pupils that are like a cat's pupils, New York Lily wants to know, are you talking about grays that have pupils like that, or reptilians, or one of the other species?
I can't tell y'all that. That's abduction criteria. I got to have some secrets, guys. I'll never know who's lying and telling the truth. All right, it's the human-type aliens, okay? How's that?
The human.
The human-type aliens. Yeah, that's all I'm telling you. I ain't telling you no more.
Well, I don't know which ones that is. The grays?
No, the grays are grays. Reptilians are grays. There's a race that kind of looks like us. They're not exactly perfect.
Like the tall blondes?
Yeah, they look a lot like us. They're about 6.5 to 7 foot on average in height. A lot of times they do have long flowing hair, but you know what? Their hair is real thin and skanky looking. It's not all pretty like human hair is, which is also an abduction criteria. Their heads are slightly bigger than ours. Their eye color is different than ours. Their pupil size is different than ours. They have 6 digits, 6 fingers, 6 toes. One of the other things is that some ancient people have described them quite well. Some modern people, like Hitler, has described them quite well. He mentions it in his book, Mein Kampf, which scares the hell out of
me. So are you saying that Hitler was a contactee?
I don't know what Hitler was. All I know is that it seems like Germany had the first major contact to anybody on the planet as far as the modern age goes. As far as the ancient world goes, it was Egypt and Samaria. As far as the modern world goes, it seems to have been Germany right before World War One. What I find interesting about this is just right before the turn of the last of 1900s, Germany was the most advanced nation on the planet, not the United States. And it would have made sense that a race would have contacted them first. Also, a lot of his genetic program stuff that he did is stuff that the aliens do. So it was almost like they were using him. That's why when people tell me the human aliens are all nice and sweet, I have to go, yeah, whatever. I ain't buying that for nothing. Not after World War II and what Hitler did. I really think, and plus, the Germans, get this, the Germans started building flying saucers in 1911. They had started building, and they built 6 prototypes. From 1911 to 1917. And a lot of people think that's what the Roswell crash was, one of the recovered prototypes that we recovered after the war, but we'll never know that, so there's no reason to argue about it. But there are a lot of people that do think that. So, you know, but they were legitimately doing this. And look how much more advanced Germany was than the rest of the world at World War II. They were building nukes and jets. The only reason we got it is because we stole their damn scientists. They were that much further ahead of us. And it does appear, and there's a lot of stuff that Hitler wrote in his book that sounds like somebody that was having contact with one of the more vicious types of aliens.
Well, like Oppenheimer, you know, we kind of took him from Germany, and he worked on the atom bomb. And I have heard from a fair, I don't know how good the source is. That's what I've been trying to check out. That Oppenheimer had his own experiences with E.T.
I've heard that, too. And I've actually heard a couple of German scientists that might have had it. They said that the Germans were working hand-in-hand with the humans on several different projects.
Okay, you said the Germans were working hand-in-hand with the humans, but what did you mean?
Human-type aliens, the ones that look like us. They think that they were working with them. And then the way they did, but see, what bothered me about all this is when they described the ships, they described gray ships, so I'm kind of wondering what the hell was going on there. But none of us were there. Hitler was a ruthless SOB, but, you know, and the book Mein Kampf does suggest that there might have been some alien contact, but it doesn't prove it. It is speculation, ladies and gentlemen, so don't go out and say Joe said that Hitler was an abductee, because I really don't know. It's just when he describes these angels that used to come talk to him and the things that they used to tell him and the way he described them sounds a whole hell of a lot like someone going to have that's having some type of contact. It just sounded a whole lot like it.
Well, when you talk about angels, you know, do people put that angel experience into a file in their brain that they can relate to? Is that why they call them angels? Because, you know, you grow up learning about God and Jesus and angels, and that is the thing, that's the file you can put it in your brain?
Yeah, well, humans, well, first off, we want to think that it's something nice and good, not something evil or bad in the first place. And then the human aliens do a lot kind of resemble what we would consider angels. We may have been even conditioned that way early on to receive them like that. You know, back in the days of the Sumerians and all, we may have been conditioned to perceive them as that. They say, according to the Sumerians, there's a big text the Sumerians wrote about these human-like people that came here and built these great white domes, and they lived in the domes because they couldn't breathe the air on the planet. They actually say that. And these people in there created a race that created us, or created a race like us. And then, according to the Sumerians, the reptilians used to come in, steal their women, rape their women, and the children were born different. They asked why.
Why different how?
They were different in the fact that they didn't look different, they acted different. Before that, and if you listen to the Sumerians or the Christian Bible or the Egyptians, before this particular happened, when they just created this slave race, is what they considered us to be, a slave race, we could do things like plow, procreate, name the animal, but we didn't ask why we had to go plow the field, or why we had to do this, or why we had to do that. But they said once the reptilians introduced their DNA to us, we became a sentient race, a self-aware race, and we wanted to know why. We're not going to plow your fields anymore. Kiss our ass. We've had enough of this. There's more of us than you. Get off our damn planet. And they think that's what happened. And then if you go to the almost every ancient culture has this story. The Mayans and the Aztecs have it. The Egyptians have it. The Christians have it. You know, the Christians talk about it themselves.
What is the Christian story that relates to
Adam and Eve?
Okay.
The serpent came in. What did they call the apple that Eve ate?
Well, to me, the serpent, you know, he walked on legs, and then he was made to crawl on his belly. In other words, the legs were taken away. To me, for the Bible, that has always been a sign of evolution, not really.
But what did they call the apple? They called it the apple of the tree of life, that knowledge.
The tree of knowledge.
The tree of knowledge, the apple. So she became self-aware. Because, I mean, there's no doubt she became self-aware, because the very first thing Eve did was cover herself. She realized she
couldn't
make it to the world. She was now self-aware. She's like, what the hell? I've been running through the woods with no clothes on? What kind of idiot am I? And so that's the first thing she did was, well, you know, you know, jungles are all great and all, but when you run around naked, you know, things can get you. So she became self-aware. That's what happened. But it's not just that story. I mean, everybody wants to take the Adam and Eve story as the first one, but it wasn't. Sumerians talked about this 3,000 years before the Christian Bible was written. Not just that. They talked about Ezekiel 3,000 years before the Christian Bible. Also the Great Flood. All of these things were something that was taken out of context 3,000 years after the fact. And I have to say, a lot of what people considered to be gods or angels or demons was probably aliens. Because, let's be honest, if I went back 2,000 years to the time of Christ, and I brought a couple of little things with me, like my computer, my iPod, my machine gun, torch, a couple of little knick-knack and things, the only way they would be able to perceive me is as a god. And if I was a more advanced race, you know, that came back and that could hover over the water and wave their hands over you and heal you with one of their devices, the only way you could perceive me is as a god. There'd be no other way.
Well, right, because back then, you know, that was the only brain file you had that you could put it in that made sense.
But even in today's society, a lot of people would still consider them to be gods, simply because they cannot understand their technology. But that's the whole point. Anywhere dating back more than about 500 years, if the aliens had showed their face, they were either going to be treated as gods or as demons. So I do think a lot of our our culture dealing with that is from them.
I've been working with a man for over a year now, I think. And you know, at first he said, you know, he was seeing things and blah 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 and in these crafts and he could show them to me and blah blah blah. Well, okay. It was only about 6 months ago that he called me, and he was just almost hysterical, and he's been looking at this for about 7 years, and he said, I have been totally wrong. I have seen what's really going on, and the spirit world and the UFO world are intertwined. It's all messed up, and, you know, he was seeing aliens with what he called demons. And, you know, it really disturbed him.
Well, mainly because what he was probably calling demons, he just couldn't understand it in any other shape, form, or fashion. That's the whole problem here. I mean, we're stuck. We're humans. I mean, we're not even out of the womb yet. I mean, come on, we barely poked our head out of the womb. We got maybe, what, six or two dozen people that's managed to get out of the womb and get into space. The rest of us are all still huddled in Mother Earth in our spaceship that's hurling around the universe. We're all just kind of stuck here, and we don't really know much. I mean, we're only, even if you give us due evolution, we're only a 2-million-year-old species in a 15-billion-year-old galaxy. Anything out there is probably way more evolved than we are. We're just babies. Our sun's only 5 billion years. There's stars out there, there's systems out there that are 13, 14 billion years old. So if you were a race that was sentient, 100 million, a billion, you're so far beyond us that, first off, you're never going to be perceived as anything but gods. And it's just a shame because humans should be smart enough to distinguish against the two, but we're not. We're just babies. And maybe in 100 years, maybe in 1,000 years, we'll be at least old enough to say, okay, there's some weird stuff going on and we need to figure out what it is. But right now, it's easier to stick our heads in the sand and ignore it than it is to find out. Because I've said this before, if aliens are not real and none of these people are having alien contact, then you have about 10% of the population on this planet that needs serious psychiatric health. Serious. 10 to 15% of the population. So, I mean, that's a dangerous
thing
to have 15, you know, 600 to a billion people running around crazy. So either having contact or we got that many crazy people. So something, either way it goes, and I've said this before, either way it goes just needs to be looked into by the government. Because
either way it goes, it's getting serious, right?
Yeah, because if they're having contact, then the government should want to know about the contact. And if they're not having contact, then they're all just loony bins. Then, look, we need to find out what they're putting in the water or the grain or the cereal or what the hell it is, because we need to stop it. So any way you look at this subject, it warrants a serious investigation. And this is another thing I've said.
But it's being ignored by most people. I mean, most people were like me in January of 2008. I had no idea there was even a UFO community. I didn't know that all of this, that these sightings were going on. I mean, and I think I am a representative of the major public.
Yeah, you're the majority. You're not the minority by any means. You're definitely the majority. Well, I was the same way 20 years ago. I had no idea. And most people don't. Until you seriously educate them, they don't have a clue. And then I tell this to people all the time. Don't believe everything you hear. Don't believe anything I tell you, because everything I tell you can be researched. Don't believe it. Go out and check it for yourself. And don't be scared to challenge a researcher. I'm not. I challenge them all the time. I get challenged all the time. Any researcher worth his salt won't get mad if you challenge him. He will explain to you why you're wrong or why you're right, but he won't get mad about it. If they get mad about it, there's a problem. Go on to the next one. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, I was listening today because I hear people all the time, and I used to be one of these people, by the way, that say there's no money in ufology. That's not exactly true. There is money for a select few in ufology. I call it the
Gold. Like Stephen Greer?
Oh, yeah, Stephen's making more money than I even care to think about. But there are a few out there like that, and they are making a good living off it, but they're not contributing anything back to the field. If Greer would have stayed on his disclosure, that wouldn't have made any difference. Some people say that's why he went over the edge, because he knew he wasn't going to get disclosed. Personally, I think it was a scam from day one, but I was...
Well, now, he did line up some pretty good witnesses, but he didn't vet them all.
No, he lined up some pretty good witnesses, and he did some other stuff, but then... you know, then he did the zero-point energy thing, and he was asking for all that money, and now he's doing the $2,800 a weekend, let me spiritually introduce you to E.T.,
yeah, right where he's vectoring people, vectoring UFOs in.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt.
Well, you know, one person told me that he told them that, well, if you can't see them, you're not on a high enough level
yet. Oh, yeah, that's what he says. If you can't vibrationally pick them up or whatever, you're not. It's BS is what it is. And, see, I get tired of it because there are legitimate people out there working hard on this. And he's taking money out of the field that could be actually going towards research instead of going to paying for his ranch in Virginia. You know, it's just it's a personal thing for me because when he did the 2001 thing, I was like, all right, we got a hero in the field. He's going to stand up. He's going to be recognized. And
yeah,
then,
he seemed like a stand-up guy, didn't he?
Yeah, and then Stupid Joe had to go start and I interviewed a lot of his witnesses. None of them agree on anything. None of them. They're all disappearing.
Well, you know, I mean, really, when you look at it, I mean, he had 400 people.
Yeah, and I could never come up with more than 30, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I could never come up with the 400. And I asked him on more than one occasion if he would, you know, let me get, oh, no, I'd be breaking security agreements and stuff. But the thing that really put me over the edge with him is I was listening to him doing an interview, and I heard him do this on yours, too, by the way. When he was talking about how he briefs presidents and briefs generals, let me tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, there ain't no president or no general going to get Greer to brief them on UFOs, all right? Because, frankly, he don't know as much as a really good UFO researcher does.
That would be calling me to brief them.
Well, there's just really good research, Dennis Balthaser. There's some Jim Mars, there are some really solid researchers out there that don't, you know, that do talk about some crazy stuff sometimes, but they're solid researchers that if you wanted to be briefed on what the ships were, that's who you talk to. Now, if you want
well,
to
okay,
what,
Joe, who do you think are the most solid researchers? Who are they?
Name
the top five.
I think Dennis Balthaser is one of them. I really think he's an excellent researcher. I really like Jim Mars. I just do. I don't always agree with Jim, by the way, but I really.
But Jim is all into conspiracy.
Yeah, he is. But he's a good UFO researcher. He did a lot of the fundamental work, like on the Texas airships and stuff like that. On basic, like I said, it's conspiracy stuff I don't get into because I try to stay out of that as much as possible.
But I do too.
The fundamentals of the saucer work or the ship work he's done is really credible work. And he's done good work. But the rest of them, y'all wouldn't even know. They're just nobody.
Okay, there's two. Let's hear three more.
But you wouldn't know the rest of them. They're all nobody.
Let's hear them. I don't care.
Bill Burt's an outstanding UFO researcher. DeAndrew is an outstanding UFO researcher.
Yes, she is very good.
But these aren't people that you're going to see in the field because they're credible people. They're actually doing their homework, and they don't buy all the BS. And they're going to tell you that somebody's full of shit. And that's the problem. They don't want
this. This is a G-rated show. You can't say shit.
Shucks. And I'll probably get a damn fine of that. You're definitely on FM tonight. Well, I didn't say that, y'all. That was whatever. I hope the little beeper thing worked. Yeah, I know we got to get off the air, but I hope there's a little beeper thing that's supposed to catch cuss words. Hopefully it was working.
Okay, well, we've been on 2 hours and 15 minutes,
oh,
and
yeah,
I see that in the chat room they are saying they can
the
no
air.
Longer feel their chairs.
Yeah, all right, guys, we're going to get off the air. I'm going to let Angela take us out. I was having a blast tonight, Angela. But take
this
us
is
out.
Right.
Take us out, and I'll get the archiver set up while you're taking us out.
Okay. All right. Thanks to everybody in the chat room. Thanks to Joe. I've really enjoyed this discussion we've had. This is something that I don't know hardly anything about is abductions, but I am interested. Next week we will have Stan Romanek and Alejandro Rojas. So until then, take care. Bye-bye.